Well, as Kurt mentioned a few moments ago, we're going to tackle Jeremiah this month. We'll see how it goes. So we've been doing a book a month. Today is the first day of another month, and so we're going to tackle a new book. And the book is the prophet Jeremiah. And we're going to start this message series exactly where you expected, with an interview with Bon Jovi. That's exactly where the book of Jeremiah has taken us this week. I have no idea why. None of these sermons were scripted ahead of time. We just kind of sitting through the book each month, kind of letting it take us where we will go. And for some reason, I was brought back to, a couple years ago. We were sitting around the house watching an interview with Bon Jovi, because that's what we do in our house. And I don't know why I remember this. I didn't care to watch it. I was just being a supportive husband, my wife. I didn't use any PowerPoint presentations. I didn't want Meredith to be distracted this morning. So, just the visual of Bon Jovi. But it's an interesting interview. I don't remember anything about it. I just know they were interviewing the band. And, I know John Richardson's a big Bon Jovi fan. A lot of you others are, you know, have all the CDs. Very popular band. And it was an interesting interview, because I remember at one point the interviewer asked the band, you know, this is after years of success, and they've done all the things that they've done, and they asked them, you know, if you could go back and do something else, if you could be somebody else, who would you want to be? And I think that's an interesting question. It's an interesting question to ask all of us, but when you ask somebody who is somebody, you know, somebody who is successful, powerful, well, I wonder what their responses would be. I don't remember what John Bon Jovi said. I'm sure Mary Beth can dig it up in her memory, but one of the other band members, I thought it was really interesting what they said. They said, so, you know, if you could do it all over again, who would you want to be? And it was kind of this coy, funny moment. He points at John, the lead singer, and said, I don't want to be him. And I thought it was like this great moment of transparency, because usually when you get, you know, you're a celebrity and you have these interviews, you just kind of say pat answers or whatever. And he said it in kind of a playful way, but he said it in a way that I think all of us relate to. Because all of us, at somewhere along the line, like, we want to be the lead singer. Like, we want to be the guy who gets to do movies and goes on late-night talk shows and walks down the street everybody knows. I mean, I know if we think about it long and hard enough, we like our privacy. You know, we don't want to have to deal with a paparazzi and all that stuff. But if we're really honest, the idea of kind of being the guy, the girl, the Taylor Swift, you know, whoever it is that just really kind of takes, I mean, there's something appealing about that. There's something appealing, and it's not really, I mean, it's partly about the money. Like, I've never met anybody say, yeah, I just assume be poor my whole life. I mean, we like the draw of money, but with celebrity, there's something about the attention and the respect and just the way that everybody kind of gagas over folks. I mean, I wouldn't mind people doing that over me once in a while, right? And I thought it was really interesting, because you have this really popular band, and even in the band themselves, there's this idea that those behind the stage, I mean, if I had it to do all over again and could do it, I'd want to be that guy, the guy that's out in front. Everybody wants to be the quarterback. Like, have you ever been out and then watched the kids playing football outside and saw one kid go, I'm going to be the left tackle. And they want to dream about being the left tackle. Now, I know Tyus wants to be the left tackle, but that's because he's 8 feet tall. But the most of the people, when you're a little kid out in the yard, just getting it, nobody wants to be the 11th man, you know, or the 12th man, or the 6th man in the basketball team. Everybody wants to be the quarterback. That's what everybody, I want to be the quarterback. I want to be the point guard. I want to be the one that's in charge. To make the point, I think most of you know who Tom Brady is. Would you rather be Tom Brady or Nate Solder? Anybody know who Nate Solder is? Ty and Toby in the back row, I knew you got. Who's Nate Solder? He's Tom Brady's left tackle, right? Nobody's out there with the Solder jersey. Like, I wonder how many Solder jerseys they sell versus Tom Brady, because everybody likes the sex appeal of being the quarterback. But Nate Solder was second on the team in salary, because that's such an important position. So it's about money, because Brady does make a little bit more than Solder. But there's just something about that appeal, right? That appeal of, you just get to, it just seems like that's the life. I mentioned last week, Mary Beth and I and Jackie, we didn't know it, Jason and Kara were hanging out with Garth Brooks. And there was part, during the show, I was like, I want to be that guy. I mean, he made all this money. He's like, I'm going to go raise my family and live in a farm in Tennessee for 20 years and then come back and have all these people show up and sing my music again. Like, there's all those people that just, there's something about them that were like, I think if I could, I would want to be those people. And I think when you look in the Bible, you have kind of this similar situation. When you read the story of Abraham, I mean, who wouldn't want to be Abraham? Like, I know that he has his challenges, and we talk about, you know, all the things that tested him along the way, but in the end, I think Abraham would be a pretty good dude to be. Or Moses. I mean, I want to be Charlton Heston, right? I want to be the guy who gets the commandments from God drawn to him. I mean, that would be an incredible opportunity that I think if any of us could choose, I would want to be one of those folks. In our Sunday morning class the last couple weeks, we talked about the story of Esther. Who wouldn't want to be Esther? This great queen who takes on all this leadership. Well, this morning we turn to a guy who I don't think you want to be. Like, everybody doesn't get to be the front of the band. Everybody doesn't get to be the quarterback. There's all these other people who make up the team or who make up whatever it is. And we all know that there's more of them than there are of the lead. There are more other players than there are quarterbacks. There are more people behind the band or behind the lead singer than lead singers. And when you start to kind of look into the biblical story, even the Bible itself, there are some people who we look at and say, I think I would want that life. Abraham, Moses. You know, David's kind of tricky because I don't know if I'd want to go through all that he went through. But there's a lot of people I would rather be than Jeremiah. And so this morning, we're going to get into this book. And it is a difficult book. You know, we're going to kind of say that several times. It's not exactly something that you want to be going through your reading for 5 or 6 years. You know, if I said, hey, we're going to study Jeremiah this year, that would have been a difficult year. But there's something valuable about Jeremiah's message. The book is tedious. It's 52 chapters long. That's a lot. And I think I could handle the 52 chapters if they weren't so dense and so depressing. I mean, you can only tell me you're all going to be destroyed and die so many times before you go, man, I get it. But that's how the book reads. I mean, it's just this constant warning that bad things are going to happen. And so for a moment, as we kind of begin to talk about Jeremiah this morning, I want us to think about Abraham and compare Abraham's call to Jeremiah's call, because they were both called by God. Genesis chapter 12, Abraham receives a call from God that he's going to take Abraham and make him a father of many nations, and he's going to bless the world through Abraham. And at the beginning of the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah gets a similar call from the standpoint that God comes to Jeremiah and calls him, but the nature of his calling couldn't be more different than Abraham's. So let's talk for a few minutes about Jeremiah. I think it was helpful when we studied the Thessalonian letters last month to kind of get a little bit of background to get us into the message a little bit, to get us into what Paul was talking about. And I think the same thing holds true with Jeremiah. We have to put ourselves in the context of Jeremiah. He lives a pretty long life, and his lifetime spans a pretty tumultuous time in Judah and Israel. The very beginning of the book reads, "The words of Jeremiah, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests at Anathoth in the territory of Benjamin." So we learn a couple things in the first sentence. He was born to a priestly family. So he was a Levite. He was born in the Levitical tribe. His family was in charge of priestly duties. And so he's a preacher kid, right? I mean, he's somebody who knew the temple, and he knew kind of life in the cult, in the religious life. He was not unfamiliar with the sacrificial system and with the singing at the temple and all the different parts that come along with that. And he was from the little town of Anathoth, which is 3 miles north of Jerusalem, which will become significant as we start to get into his letter and his calling a little bit. And so it's difficult to know exactly what life was like for Jeremiah growing up. But when we put it in the context of the nation, we'll get a little bit more insight. The word of the Lord came to him in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah. So let's pause and remind ourselves about Josiah. Josiah was the boy king, became king when he was 13, and he's the one that led major reforms throughout the nation of Israel, right? Throughout Judah. It's when the book of the law was found under Josiah's reign. So this is kind of a rejuvenated time, but it's 13 years in, and it's going to be short-lived. And so you kind of wonder what life was like in Anathoth when Jeremiah is called. How long did it take the reforms of Jerusalem to kind of spin out into the outlying areas and territories? What was the word on the street, right? What was the word among the priestly families? Was his family discouraged by the way that things had kind of gone the way of foreign gods and all those things? Or was his family more the one who was fighting or just had kind of given up and given into this? And we don't really know, but we got to kind of keep all those things in the back of our mind. If this is what the layout of the nation was like when he hears the word of the Lord. Now he hears the word of the Lord in the 13th year of Josiah's reign, and he hears it through the reign of Jehoiakim, not such a great king, son of Josiah, all the way down to the 5th month of the 11th year of Zedekiah, son of Josiah, king of Judah, when the people of Jerusalem went into exile. So he begins his calling when Josiah's reform is taking over, and he's going to keep preaching this message all the way until the Babylonians come in and take captivity of Jerusalem, of the Assyrians. He's kind of overseeing all that time frame. And so Jeremiah is preaching a message that nobody's going to listen to. Jeremiah is called to people that aren't going to listen to him. They're going to ignore him. And he's going to basically oversee the demise of his people. So let's kind of listen to the call of Jeremiah. It's a really kind of two sides, kind of an extreme. You get both sides where you have this affirming call from God, but this discouragement of the realities that Jeremiah is going to face. So the word of the Lord came to me saying, this is in verse 4, one of those famous verses that Kurt was talking about, chapter 31, and then this passage, this verse here, probably the most famous from the whole book. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Ah, sovereign Lord, I said, I don't know how to speak. I'm only a child. But the Lord said to me, don't say that I'm just a child, because you must go to everyone I send you and do and say whatever I command you. Don't be afraid of them, for I am with you and will rescue you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, now I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over the nation, over nations and kingdoms to uproot and to tear down, to destroy, to overthrow, to build, and to plant. The word of the Lord came to me. What do you see, Jeremiah? I see the branch of an almond tree, I replied. And the Lord said, you have seen correctly, for I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled. There's a little play on words there in Hebrew that we don't really translate over into English, but the word for watching sounds kind of like almond tree. So there's kind of a play on words there. And then the word of me came to me again. What do you see? And I see a boiling pot tilting away from the north, I answered. And the Lord said to me, from the north, disaster will be poured out on all who live in the land. I'm about to summons all the people of the northern kingdoms. Now, where is Anathoth? It's 3 miles north of Jerusalem. And so Jeremiah is getting this word that, hey, destruction is going to come right through your hometown to Jerusalem. Their kings will come and set up their thrones in the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem. They will come against all her surrounding walls and against all the towns of Judah. I will pronounce my judgments on my people because of their wickedness in forsaking me, in burning incense to other gods, and in worshiping what their hands have made, violating the 2 first commandments. Get yourself ready. Stand up and say whatever I command you. Don't be terrified by them, or I will terrify you before them. Today I have made you a fortified city, an iron pillar, and a bronze wall to stand against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, its officials, its priests, and the people of the land. They will fight against you, but will not overcome you, for I am with you and will rescue you, declares the Lord. Do we listen to the call of Jeremiah? Listen to the call of Abraham. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. I want that blessing. I want that calling, not the one Jeremiah gets. Yeah, people are going to want to kill you. And I mean, he gives them his promise, I'm going to protect you. But he gives that to Abraham, and there's not all this other stuff. Yeah, there are going to be people who want to kill you, and they're going to take up arms against you. And the nature of his calling there, you're going to tear down and destroy and overthrow. I want that calling. Jeremiah's calling is much different. You know, the testing of Abraham's faith, like we know that, right? He had to leave his country, and he had to hold out for an offspring. And when finally he got Isaac, then God, of course, sends him to the mountain to kill him. There's a lot of ways that Abraham is tested, and so I don't want to belittle that. But compared to what plight Jeremiah faces, if we had to choose, Abraham's a little more like Bon Jovi, right? He's kind of the front of the band. He gets to go on late-night talk shows and talk about how great life is. Jeremiah is a stagehand in the back that's having to do the dirty work. And I want us to think a little bit about our calling. Because it seems to me that Abraham didn't get to choose. I mean, it's not like God had a deck of cards, like a fortune teller, and says, okay, I've got five different options for you here. Which one do you want? Instead, he just comes to him and he says, Abraham, this is what I've called you to do. Which, if that's your car, and that's your call, then that's great. If it's on the flip side and you're Jeremiah, he also doesn't get to choose. God says, I've called you to do great things, but it's going to look different for you, Jeremiah, than it looks for Abraham, than it looks for Moses, than it looks for David, than it looks for anybody else. Because somehow, some way, God calls us into things that he has prepared uniquely for each one of us. And that's kind of where we're going to start this whole plodding through Jeremiah. We're going to get kind of to the meat of his lessons over the next couple of weeks. But this morning, I wanted us to just pause and reflect for a few minutes, because I think there's something about this whole calling at the beginning of Jeremiah which will speak to all of us if we allow it. This whole idea of a prophet, we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. I thought about kind of diving into that a little bit today, but we'll get to that next week, I think, a little bit more. What exactly the role of a prophet was, and what exactly Jeremiah was doing about speaking, thus saith the Lord, and speaking on behalf of the Lord. But before he even gets to that point, let's consider the fact that the very beginning of the letter, or the beginning of the book, God comes to Jeremiah and he says, before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you, and I had plans for you. Now, there's a lot of different things to say about this passage. But it's a powerful statement for Jeremiah, and it's a powerful thought and reflection for each one of us. You know, one of the things about the creation, which is so beautiful, and I think speaks loudly to the Creator, is that it is so different. Like, right now, there's over 7 billion people on this world. And if you've been to an Ohio State football game, I mean, that's about the biggest crowd most of us are ever going to see. You know, there's 100,000 people inside and then another few thousand people outside. So there's a mass of people, 125,000 people. 7 billion people are in this world. And you might see a doppelganger once in a while. Hey, man, that looks just like Chris Cole. But it's not Chris Cole, right? There's only one Chris Cole. I was waiting for somebody, amen, but nobody did, so you're good. There's only one Chris Cole. There's only one Adam Metz, and I know there's a lot of amens about that. There's only one of us. And when you factor in all the unique things that make us who we are, obviously we look differently. Our skin color is all different, right? All different shades of different colors. Our hair color is different. Some of ours falls out. Some of us grow extra hair, right? It's just all over the place. Our facial features are different. And that's just our appearance. When you come down to actually what makes us who we are, our personalities are different, our accents are different, we speak different languages, we have different struggles, we have different strengths, different weaknesses, and somehow, in some way, God is at work in all of that. Now, I think it's a little bit different what we're going to do with the text here than what Jeremiah receives. He kind of receives this unique prophetic calling. But I want us to think more widely about just the way that God has made his impression upon us. How he has made you just the way that you are. Because I have this whole idea of celebrity. I mean, it's obviously at work in our surrounding culture, but I think it works in a similar way within Christianity, within churches. I think it's easy to become enamored with pastors of large churches. It's easy to go, man, if I could just be that person, and I could bless all these people. Like, our motives can be good, right? I mean, we would be able to bless so many people. If our church was just bigger, if we just had more bells and whistles, if we had a bigger budget, I mean, how many times have we said that to ourselves? We could do so much more. Right? What if our mission collection was $300,000 instead of $3,000? Just imagine all the things that we can do. And I think that sometimes so consumes people in church. And there's something pure about that. But what Jeremiah does is Jeremiah gives us the other sense of the gospel. Because that first sense of wanting more and bigger, that's kind of Abraham's call to just go out and bless and be big and all these things. And then Jeremiah comes along and says, yeah, but that's just not the way that God always works. And if you need evidence for this, you can just look around the world, right? I think I first started realizing this when I was probably in high school. And you just meet these people in high school who just seem to be good at everything. They're good looking, they have great personalities, they do better in every sport that you try, they're better at every subject that you are, and there are just some people that are just super, super talented and gifted. Most of us fall somewhere in the middle, right? Most of us, if my kids could just be ordinary, I mean, that would just be great, right? Because everybody else just falls in that middle category. But the fact of the matter is, we're all different. And it's a testament to how great of a God that we serve, because how boring would it be if we were all the same? We understand that. But one of the things that we have to think about is in our differences, it can be very easy to be discontent with who we are. Just like in our first conversation about talking about being the front of the band. You kind of have to not always be looking to all the things that everybody else has. Because inevitably, we all do that in our lives. I mean, I'm not saying we walk around all the time thinking, oh, I wish I was that person, I wish I was that person, I wish I was that person. We don't do that, but more subtly, these thoughts come into our mind and think, and if I look like that, or if I had that gift, or that ability, or if I was able to do this better, or had that financial opportunities, or whatever it is, you can kind of fill the blank in, but we find ourselves oftentimes doing that. Oh, if I could just do this. If I could just be that person. And it seems to me there's something about that that betrays God's will and intention in our life. I mean, it's a really simple thing that we teach our kids, but I think as adults, we have to be reminded of this sometimes. God made us just the way that we are. I don't think it's a manufacturing metaphor. Like, I don't think he's putting body parts together and he has this list of strengths and weaknesses and he goes, okay, Hutch, we're going to give him this, this, and this from the weakness side and this, 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 and the positive side and off you go. I don't think it's quite that mechanistic, but I think there is a sense that somehow, some way, in the mysteriousness that we are unique in the way that we're unique, we come out through our life, and of course, it's not all biological. A lot of it's just socially, the way that we've been impacted. And somehow through that whole process, we come out and we live our lives with certain strengths, certain weaknesses, certain temptations that are unique to us that other people don't have to deal with. Yeah, and this is kind of really what made me kind of go down this road a little bit. Because I was thinking about the news the last couple weeks and all this discussion about bathrooms and transgendered use of bathrooms and all this stuff. And I get all the complexity of it and all the issues that are involved in it. But I wonder how many times the people that get involved in these conversations ever sit down and think, what would it be like to be one of those people? To be a transgender person who's struggling with their sexual identity, trying to figure out how that all works? Because there's times in my life where I go, I got my struggles, I have my issues, but I'm glad that's not mine, right? Or what about homosexuals? Somebody who has the attraction for somebody of the same sex, and we talk all the different things about, you know, ethics and all that stuff, but what about the reality that those people face? I'm glad that's not my struggle. Because it seems to me that that's a little bit like Jeremiah's message, right? Where Jeremiah is the one that's having to deal with stuff that if I could choose, I would just prefer not to kind of go down that road. And we could talk about a million things, right? You see these people, and there are even TV shows about these morbidly obese people who weigh 600 or 700 pounds. And I think about that, and we always see those kind of situations. We think, why does anybody let themselves do it? Well, because it's hard, right? It's a challenge, and we all have these struggles that are unique to us. And it's easy to point fingers and go, oh, I'm so glad I'm not that person, or I'm not glad I'm that person. But there's another way to look at this, and that is God has made us the way that he's made us. Now, we have flaws that I don't think came from God, but living in the midst of the fall, we have flaws that we're kind of dealing with, and even our flaws are unique to us. It's not like I could list five things and go, okay, these are our five sins, folks, that we're all working with. How many are there? Thousands and thousands of just nuances of this and this and this. And somehow, we're all trying to figure out, how do we live in accordance with the call that we receive from God? He tells Jeremiah that before he formed him in his mother's womb, he knew him. It seems to me that that's a powerful statement that we all have to live by. It is easy for all of us to look to somebody else and think, man, if my life was like that person's, I would be so much better off. And I'm not even going to stand up here and say that's not true. Probably sometimes it would be true, because I think that Jeremiah had it a lot harder than Abraham had it. I mean, just did. I'm not saying either one of them had it easy, but if you had to pick one, why would you pick one? Because we think that Abraham would have been a little easier life to live. But God doesn't give us this, like, magic shell game, you know, that peanut game where you have to follow the peanut and pick which cup it's under, and if you do that, you get a little easier life. Instead, you're born to whatever parents you were born. You had no vote in that. And some of you would take that vote back, probably. Not in a mean way, but in reality, if your parents were abusive or if you had to deal with certain things, if you had to do it all over again, you would, but you can't. And so you're given a series of playing cards. You can't determine what country you'd be born in or what part of the country you'd be born in. Some of you have abusive pasts or something's happened in your life. Maybe some people have been raped, and you think, man, if I just didn't have to deal with that, if I could leave that behind, then my life would be different. And the fact of the matter is, you're probably right, but equally true is that the fact that you can't. There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, we can cope and move forward. You know what I'm saying, though. There's nothing you can do to change any of those things. And so it seems to me that when Jeremiah's called, he had two options. That's really all he had. God says, I've called you to do this. And he could say, okay. Or he could say, I'm not going to do that. What other options did he have? And you get a sense that there was a little bit of reluctance on his part, because he says, well, you know, I can't really speak very well. Listen again to what he was called to do, right? God says, hey, I'm sending you to kingdoms. I'm appointing you over nations and kingdoms to uproot, tear down, destroy. He's not a king. He's a lowly priest from a small town in the outskirts of you know, in that time, 3 miles wasn't even the suburbs of Jerusalem. It's way out in the country. And God comes to him and says, yeah, I'm going to send you, and you're going to be a big deal. And so it's no surprise that Jeremiah says, I don't know if I can do this. And God leaves him this promise. And this is how I kind of wanted to end our time this morning. He gives him this promise. And I think it's the same promise that all of us need to hear from time to time. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I mean, we need to hear that too, and just be reminded that God has made us the way that he's made us. And there's plenty of opportunities to look at the characters of the Bible and see that not any one person of God looks the same way, that our strengths and gifts in the kingdom are all different. And opposite of that, all of our weaknesses and shortcomings are all kind of different and unique. That's why it's so hard to kind of stumble through this life. And I think it's important to hear that message that God gives Jeremiah. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I don't know what that means. This is a unique calling to Jeremiah, but I think that the principle is there throughout the Bible that God does care about this world. He's involved in this world. I believe in free will. I don't think God's like this puppet master that's kind of guiding and directing our every path and decision that we make. But I sometimes wonder if when we emphasize that point sometimes, that we may not forget that God's still kind of in charge of this world some way, somehow. And as somehow within our free will, God is still going to use us to achieve His will. But I think the message that really spoke to me this week, that I think gets us on a good first step forward in the book of Jeremiah, was in verse 8, where God tells Jeremiah, "Don't be afraid of them, because I am with you and will rescue you." I think sometimes when we get so discouraged about our situation in life, when we feel so helpless, that it's easy to just think, "Man, if I could just be this person, this situation," you know. I think Paul kind of talks about this in the New Testament when he talks about this thorn he has in the flesh. Like, all of us have that thing that if we could just overcome it. And I think Jeremiah's calling from God, what God tells Jeremiah is not how to avoid it, not how to ignore it, but how to work through it. And that's really what we're going to see in the next 51 chapters of Jeremiah, is how he works through the challenges that all of us have. Jeremiah knows maybe better than anyone else in the Old Testament what it was going to be like. He's going to watch his entire nation collapse. I mean, there's not much worse situation to deal with than to sit here and sit back and go, yeah, and you're going to be part of trying to make it stop, but it's going to be fruitless. It's going to be futile. And so there's a message for us to kind of get through the next week or two as we think about this. I want you to just think about your life and your calling and how God has made you. Because He's done something in your life that He's not done anywhere else. I'm convinced that that's part of what the uniqueness of us is. In ministry, you meet a lot of different kinds of people. And it's amazing. I meet people who remind me of each other, or, hey, you really like this person, you should get to know. But they're always so different. There's always so much difference, and it's something we should celebrate, but acknowledge that it's a challenge sometimes. It's a challenge to deal with all the things that we have to deal with. So Randy's done a great job of kind of choosing songs for us this morning, and this last one will just kind of reiterate this message that we've kind of been wrestling with this morning, is we don't have all the answers. We don't know why Abraham got the lot that he got, and Jeremiah got the lot that he got, and that you all have the lot that you have. But what we can do is affirm the fact that God's in control. He's going to guide us forward. And so we'll sing that about that as we exit out here this morning. So if you want to come up and lead a song.